Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Now then, you're welcome back. So I'm sure you've seen at this stage, Toronto Raptors are NBA champions. They've won their very first NBA championship. To discuss, we are joined by Ryan Farmer-Jones, editor emeritus of Slam Magazine, a regular on the show. Good to have you with us, Ryan.
Thanks, Joe. How are you?
Very well. So Toronto Raptors have got this done. Cue pandemonium.
Yeah, it was quite the scene up in Toronto. They had the parade yesterday. It looked like there were about 3 million people turned out. That might be a slight exaggeration, but it was a great crowd. City, you know, they're the only NBA franchise outside of the United States. So it really felt like all of Canada rooting for that team and getting behind them. And, you know, the chance to potentially end a dynasty or at least put quite a dent in one in the Warriors was, I think, something they took a lot of pride in. They really enjoyed it.
And for the city of Toronto, a big deal. 1993, the last time any franchise there had something to really celebrate. The Blue Jays won a World Series back in 93. So that's a couple of generations going by.
Right. And obviously a huge hockey area. You know, Canada traditionally ice hockey and the Maple Leafs, I think one of the, you know, sort of the original great franchises of the NHL. I don't follow hockey closely, but my impression is that they haven't been as strong in recent years. So, yeah, this was really a big thing for them. And Toronto's a great, you know, I think a lot of folks in the U.S. don't think of Canada as being a place where basketball is a big deal, but it's grown a great deal since they've had NBA teams. You know, they used to have a Vancouver team on the West Coast and then have had the Raptors since about the mid-90s. But increasingly, they've had more and more Canadian homegrown players who've made it to the NBA, who've played in American colleges, very good players. They obviously had Vince Carter up there about 20 years ago, which really kind of inspired a lot of excitement with his game, and it's really just built from there. So Canada's actually a great, in Toronto, particularly a great area for basketball. And yeah, it kind of felt like they were due.
Slightly nasty postscript. Did I see 4 people were shot?
Yeah, it was strange how, I don't think anyone was killed, but there was some sort of shooting, and I haven't seen details of what it was. Again, I mean, there's a massive crowd out, and I think even the police chief up there said, you know, we're not going to let this take away from this beautiful event that was otherwise largely peaceful. So it was sort of just kind of brushed aside as not a big deal, which seems strange, but I guess maybe when there's that many people out for something and that's the only minor violence, I don't know. It was really strange when it came up and then it just kind of went away. So yeah, very, very odd little postscript there.
On the court, they got it done in game 6 in Oakland as well. 114 points to 110. Drama right to the end. Steph Curry had an effort at a 3-pointer when there was only a point in it.
Right. Yeah, a guy who has made so many big shots in the playoffs and throughout his career, 3-pointers. You know, Curry was, I don't want to say emblematic, obviously, because Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson both obviously had to leave the series with more serious injuries. But, you know, Curry, you know, probably not 100%. Maybe nobody on that team, you know, at 100%. And, again, made a lot of big shots, played fairly well in the series, but kind of wasn't quite able to make those big plays that were going to lift them up. They needed some magic, I think, from Steph that they've gotten from him quite a lot during this run of the past 5 or 6 years. And it just wasn't there at the end. And, you know, Toronto certainly had, I don't want to say luck. I think, you know, they made their own luck, but they tended to come out well in these late game situations throughout the playoffs. That 4-bounce shot off the rim that Kawhi hit against the Philadelphia 76ers in the conference playoffs. And then, you know, getting maybe some luck with Steph missing there when you probably expect he would make it.
Any theories as to why the Warriors seem to have just run out of steam? Obviously, the injury profile has been fairly eye-catching. Is this just almost inevitable with a team that have been on the road for this long, or is there anything untoward going on?
No, I think, I mean, the injuries are massive. You know, you have Kevin Durant, maybe the best all-around player in the league. He's on that conversation with really LeBron and Kawhi Leonard at this point, I think, when he's healthy. So to have him go down, try to come back, and obviously whether it was aggravating, you know, related to the previous injury or it was a brand new injury, obviously it looked like there was some connection with the Achilles and the calf. And then to have Klay Thompson, you know, I think they still could have won that series with a healthy Klay and a healthy Steph and the rest of that core that were there before Durant, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, those guys who were the core of that first title team. And then also the 73 win team that eventually lost to Cleveland, but set the single season record for wins. So I think they could have pulled it out if they'd had, you know, Thompson and Curry and the rest healthy, even without Durant. But without Durant and Thompson, it was hard to fathom that they'd be able to, just because the Raptors had a lot of depth. They had a lot of really solid play from their bench. And they were playing without fear too, which I think teams had struggled to do against this Golden State team in recent years. They were kind of a terrifying opponent in the way they could score so quickly in bunches. And this Toronto team never looked like they had any fear. And that seemed to come from Kawhi Leonard and kind of filter down through the rest of that roster. They didn't look afraid. And then I think by the end, they just had them outmanned as well.
So I appreciate so much of the Toronto Raptors' success revolves around Kawhi Leonard, who we'll talk about. What are the other cogs in the wheel? Like, are the coaching ticket well-regarded? Other players, have they come to the fore? Or is this kind of a Kawhi Leonard show?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, it's funny when a team like this comes together, a bunch of sort of role player types, you know, who maybe weren't very highly regarded, suddenly they're part of a championship team, and you say, oh, wow, this guy was really important. You couldn't have won without this guy, even though he didn't score as much. So I think he sort of shined a spotlight on those guys that you wouldn't otherwise if you didn't win a title. Certainly Kyle Lowry, who's been the point guard for Toronto for a number of years now, he was seen as a guy who struggled in big moments and playoff games in particular, but played really well for much of the playoffs this year and was really important for them. Another guy whose mindset is kind of a fearless player. And then some of these younger unsung guys for Toronto, from Fred VanVleet, who was an undrafted guy a few years ago, Pascal Siakam, a very young guy who played American college ball and wasn't all that good in college, but had all the sort of raw skills that just hadn't been refined yet. He's improved incredibly. So have been a number of guys. Mark Gasol, whose older brother Pau Gasol was a part of those Laker title teams from earlier this decade. You know, there were a number of guys for them who just kind of filled their roles and were functioned really well around Kawhi as the sort of central focus. The coaching staff, Nick Nurse is a guy who was coaching in the U.S. minor league, the developmental league here up until, oh, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. So he wasn't sort of a proven guy at this level, but I think they saw a young guy who, a relatively young coach who could get guys to buy in. And, you know, it was a new team really built around Kawhi from the Raptors teams in recent years that had made relatively deep playoff runs but could never get by LeBron and Cleveland. And with LeBron gone and a new look in Toronto, it felt like this could be their year. But it also felt like it might have been Boston's year. It might have been Philadelphia's year. As these playoffs went on, certainly we saw that Toronto had, I think, not only the right mix of talent, but the right mental makeup to really make a run. They were just a really well-put-together team. Guys complimented each other on the court. And it was neat to see.
I know, obviously, Steph Curry has spearheaded a change in the game of late with the number of three-pointers that he's has this incredible ability to convert.
Yeah.
You talk about a young coach there coming on board. I mean, we're obviously very familiar with football here. There's constant tactical innovation. The game is changing at a ferocious rate. Is that applying to basketball as well, beyond the three-pointer development? Like, is a young coach like the guy you're talking about here in Toronto, is he bringing new ideas to the fore, or is it not quite in that sphere?
No, it was really, you know, it's funny. Someone did the breakdown of, for all the talk about of Curry and the sort of three-point revolution in the NBA, which is a very real thing. But if you look at who's won the finals MVP award now for basically almost a decade straight, Kawhi Leonard has won 2, Kevin Durant's won a couple, LeBron has won 3. And then the only other year with Andre Iguodala, the year that LeBron was phenomenal in the finals, but they lost, so they gave it to Iguodala on the Warriors. And all of those guys are sort of these big hybrid, you know, sort of small forward, shooting guard, power forward types whose size and strength and skill set makes them sort of impossible for any other player to guard one-on-one.
Right. You know,
they're just too versatile. They're too big, too strong, too fast. And so, and all of them have become good three-point shooters, all the guys I just mentioned, but it's not the primary skill of any of those guys.
Okay.
So for all the talk of what Steph has done, and he's had a massive impact on the league and the way the game is played, so many young players now come up, you know, this idea that the three-point shot can be your primary form of offense as a lead player, not just a guy who does that a bit on the side, or a great player who does it occasionally, but a guy who does it all the time and can be a star and MVP caliber player. So your question, now with the Raptors, it was more relying on Kawhi Leonard, who fits that mold of a LeBron, a Kevin Durant, a big, strong, multi-talented guy who can do sorts of, kind of do everything, including be an elite defender, which LeBron hasn't been for maybe a couple of years, but is still capable of. Durant has shown that. So all that is to say that, no, the Raptors didn't really do anything terribly innovative, but they had the right guy in Kawhi Leonard and then the right cast around him.
And Ryan, he's building really a phenomenal career for himself. Would you say this is Drake's finest achievement?
I was hoping we wouldn't have to discuss him.
Let's not. This is like a case study in the excesses of celebrity and ego and indulgence. This guy, I can't deal with it. I don't want to talk about him. This is just beyond annoying.
Hey, you brought him up. You're not me, man. You brought him up.
I know. I'm sorry. He has to stop doing interviews where he's talking like, we did this, did that. People said we wouldn't do this. Drake, you didn't do anything.
I'm all for fans, you know, feeling like they've contributed through their vocal support in a game environment, for example. But he takes it a bit too far, in my opinion.
He sure does. Hey, the Kawhi Leonard laugh thing, I wasn't fully aware of. I mean, just this has passed me by. I don't know. I mean, this is like, so if people haven't seen this, I think they probably have at this stage. I'm just going to play a short clip, naturally with some music sampling Drake underneath, because,
course,
I mean, how could you not? So this kind of came up in September of last year, a media day. Kawhi Leonard, the star player, didn't do a huge amount of media. Somebody asked him what kind of guy he was. And as you'll hear, he kind of says, you know, he's a fun guy or whatever, but he can't even see who's asking the question. And then he sort of laughs.
Right.
And the Kawhi Leonard laugh has become this like behemoth, to the point where in Toronto, in front of thousands, millions of people, he kind of has to do the fake laugh at the end. So here it is, the Kawhi Leonard laugh. This took me a bit by surprise.
Obviously, I love the game of basketball. I mean, it's just more question you have to ask me in order for me to tell you about myself. I just can't give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at.
Leonard makes it official. There's a new NBA champion, and it's a team from Toronto, Canada. We the North are now we the champions, the Raptors, the 2019 NBA champs.
I just want to say thank y'all. Let me do what I do on the floor, and now we got a championship. Thank you, and like they said, have fun with it. Aha, ha, ha, ha.
There we are, Ryan. This is where it's at. The YouTube autoplay after the initial media day, the initial Kawhi Leonard laugh, took me to Kevin Hart's reaction to the Kawhi Leonard laugh, where Kevin Hart was in some studio, like some like ESPN type setup, whatever, some basketball show. Literally, he couldn't stop laughing at it. He thought this was the funniest thing he had ever seen. I'm sitting here thinking I'm missing something. This isn't adding up for me. But this thing is like grown legs, to say the least.
Yeah, he's an odd guy, and I think part of it is the laugh itself sounds ridiculous. But beyond that, he doesn't fit the superstar mold at all as far as his personality. He's very private. He's not doing a lot in the way of endorsements. He doesn't kind of have that public presence and that kind of natural charisma that you see, you know, we've seen over the years from Kobe, LeBron, Steph Curry, a lot, you know, obviously going back to Jordan. So he doesn't really fit the mold that way. I think famously he was driving like a beat up 20-year-old car even after he won the finals MVP a few years ago with San Antonio. So he's just a bit of an odd duck, a bit of an outlier. And then you throw this, and one of the jokes with him is that he never smiles, or very, very rarely smiles. So when he not only smiled but laughed, and then that was the laugh, there was a sense of, you've got to be kidding me.
Okay.
But yeah, he's a lot of unintentional comedy with Kawhi Leonard.
Where's he off to, and how's he going to do?
Well, so that's the thing. He's a free agent, and there is a sense that, you know, he's from the Southern California near Los Angeles. The Lakers and the Clippers both theoretically have enough money to lure him away and back to his sort of home turf. The Lakers now having just, finalized a deal for Anthony Davis to join LeBron. If they could get Kawhi Leonard as well, that team would immediately be the heavy favorites to win next year. The Clippers have a really good supporting cast that they could put around him. He's on a great team in Toronto that just won a championship. So there's a sense, why wouldn't you stay? The city loves you. The team's good. You should be able to compete for a while. So I don't think anyone knows what's going on with him, again, because he's such a private guy. There's not a lot of a sense of people being plugged into sort of how he thinks. Mm. So it's one of there's a number of sort of great mysteries this summer, and what he's going to do is chief among them.
Two last quick points. In The Guardian over here, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is writing a piece on, you know, his thoughts on the game. And he was certainly saying, you know, he was thrilled to see a Canadian team finally win. And he said that was certainly the sense right across America, bar three states, according to some study. But he was talking about the future for the NBA. He said, at the very least, this might encourage the expansion of NBA teams to include other countries, even from south of the border and elsewhere, leading to the league evolving into a more international competition. Are there plans afoot? Is this something that they're looking at, teams south of the border as well?
Well, you know, it's been discussed as a possibility for a while. London, Paris have been talked about for probably 10, 15 years as possibilities. And then also, yeah, Mexico City, perhaps, I think would probably be the big one if we stayed in North America. So I'm sure it's being discussed. I'm sure it continues to be discussed. The NBA has been very mindful of spreading the game globally. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it. You know, you've got to decide about how much expansion is too much beyond 30 teams. And do you water down the talent base a bit? So I don't have a sense of where the league will ultimately go with that. But it certainly wouldn't surprise me if Mexico City, Paris, London, and name three would end up getting franchises eventually.
Okay. The last point I wanted to ask you about, it was in that same piece, he was talking about the number of foreign players in the game now in the NBA. 108 international players from 42 countries, so like at least a foreign player at every single franchise. And he was saying the influx of these exceptional players from other countries has resulted in a higher level of competition, forcing American-born aspirants to step up their games. Like, again, to use the football analogy, when, like, it seems kind of quaint now in the 90s, but when the foreigners arrived in the English Premier League, you know, there was like an old school thought, oh, they're bringing in the diving, you know, foreigners diving. We never dived before. Whereas in truth, maybe there was a touch of that, but equally, they brought the game technically to a level which English-born players had only dreamed of at that stage. I'm curious to see if the foreign influx has infused the game with any different values or kind of skill sets that weren't there before.
I think there was a lot of the foreign players early on when they came here. You know, Tony Kukoc was one of the big early ones who came here and was part of the Bulls dynasty. He joined them once they were already sort of established. So it was a very high profile role with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. And there was a lot of question, and he was sort of the guinea pig for this. Are they tough enough? Can they hang with the American game, which seems very tough, physical? And so for him to come in and survive and have a really sort of sublime skill set, which he did, but also be tough enough to be able to compete and do well in the NBA, I think opened a lot of eyes. Dirk Nowitzki's career, obviously, has shown that you can come in with that same sort of skill set and come in and do very, very well in the NBA, you know, former MVP and a great, great Hall of Fame career. And so many of these guys now come in, they've learned from watching the Jordans, the Kobes, the LeBrons, but they also are bringing their own. Again, in Europe, the game's probably been a little more team dependent, a little more pass savvy in some cases. A little more, you know, big men who can dribble and shoot. Not that obviously that hasn't been happening with the U.S. foreign players as well. So, yeah, I would absolutely agree with Kareem. I think it's only helped the league. I think it's contributed to the way the game is going, where you expect now to see a guy who's 6'9", 6'10", 6'11". You expect he can shoot and dribble the ball, where 20 years ago, a big guy wasn't expected to do those things. And that's part of the evolution. I think the influx of European players in particular has absolutely contributed to that. It's been a good thing.
Okay, fascinating. Ryan Farmer-Jones, editor emeritus of Slam Magazine. Enjoy the break, I guess.
Yeah, I don't mind. We'll watch a little World Cup soccer here the next few weeks and see if the U.S. can put up any more 13-goal games.
Hey, listen, keep celebrating. Keep celebrating goal number 13 like it's your first, you know? It's important.
That was something.
All right, thanks, Emil. Cheers. Ryan Farmer-Jones there with us, editor emeritus of Slam Magazine. That is pretty much us done for the evening. I should mention before we go, if you haven't heard already, Off the Ball has joined forces with Three and 20 by 20 to bring you what should be a brilliant event this summer, our very first all-female roadshow celebrating the best of Irish women in sport. 20 by 20, very much celebrating role models, an essential part as well, and the essential part they play in getting women and girls into sport. So 11th of July is when we're going to do this. 11th of July will feature three different panels. Guests include Sonia O'Sullivan. Delighted to have Sonia there. Kate and Jessica Harrington, and more to be announced in the coming days. It will take place in the Alex Hotel. Limited tickets, so get yours fast if you want to come along. offtheball.com/events. It's an exclusive off-air event as well. So offtheball.com/events. OTBAM tomorrow, 7:30. on all our social channels, YouTube, Periscope, Facebook, and offtheball.com. They'll have Andy Lee in studio, and the brilliant Mike Costello from Five Live will be on with the lads as well. That should be really worth catching. Anthony Moyles talking football, and there'll be a deep dive into Michel Platini's time with UEFA, given events over the last 24 hours or so. Coming up tomorrow here on Off the Ball in the evening, Paul Rouse in studio. We'll also have the Dublin hurling manager, Matty Kenny, who's done a phenomenal job thus far, and that will be amongst other things. May check in on the Chelsea manager situation as well. It looks like Lampard's a done deal. 7 o'clock tomorrow, as usual, here on News Talk and offtheball.com as well. Tom Dunn is on the way. We'll talk to you then.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.